Bandwidth for MacBreak Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
You're listening to MacBreak Tech. Tech support for tech support. We now join a conversation already in progress. So who do you call for tech support? I mean, you personally.
Me?
Yeah.
I call, boot up my computer, and start Googling. Corporation of America.
Who do you call? Kenji, are you a phone caller for tech support?
Unfortunately, because most of the time I found when I call tech support, I'm actually answering the tech guy's questions on the phone line. Mm-hmm. I very rarely call unless it's for something I know that I can send back in, like via an RMA or warranty, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. get them to fix it. Because, I've actually been in an Apple store before with the Apple genius telling a guy something, and I had to speak up like, sorry, but that's wrong. If you do that, you'll erase the guy's data and this will happen. And the tech looked at me with this horror on his face and like, who are you?
Yeah.
And one of the techs in the store knew who I was. He's like, don't worry, that's Kenji. He'll take care of it. Don't worry.
The guy probably thought you were Apple Internal Affairs auditing his performance.
He definitely had that look of like, oh my gosh, there's a corporate guy here and I'm just screwed up.
And I've just told the guy to delete his pop account.
So don't do that. Yeah, unfortunately, I've had very little luck personally, just because I've been my own tech support for so many years.
So the biggest problem is that, you know, we've been in this business for so long. I mean, I've been in this business since 1981, mm-hmm. and the reason why I got into the business originally was because the guy at the computer store wouldn't answer my question.
Yeah.
So it became, you know, it was to me to learn how to do random access files. And then once I knew that, I'm like, well, you know, I'm going to tell this to as many people as I possibly can. And when somebody has the question about how to do it, I'm going to take the 5 minutes and say, well, this mm-hmm. is the steps that you need to do it. Yep. So really short, you know, it's like 10 lines of code to make that work. And, you know, it's actually in this manual here. And if you buy this manual, then you can learn how to do mm-hmm. it. But here's the trick and here's the disk and all that.
And actually, that's probably my best tech support for me personally has been, where's the manual? Open the cover of the manual and look through the manual.
Actually, so manuals are interesting. I always look in the back first.
Yeah.
In the index. Like, you know, I never never read a manual from front to back. It's always from back to front.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been a trick that I've learned, you know, a long time ago, because all the answers are in the back of the book, kind of like the math book in eighth grade.
Oh, where are the answers?
They're in the back of the book. It's like, cool, I'll just write down the equation and put the answers there. Software and hardware, is there a difference?
Oh, yeah.
As far as troubleshooting?
Yeah, as far as getting tech support for this stuff.
I definitely think there is.
I guess it depends on the nature of the issue, but yeah, it seems like you're going to have more luck in general. It's easier to diagnose the software stuff because it tends to have a specific error or piece of behavior that might be easier to Google, whereas the types of the nature and different types of hardware failures can be a little further afield as far as what people are going to have out there is what they've found and the solutions for it.
For example, in the case of hardware, generally I go by a checklist, right? You know, when you're trying to troubleshoot something or like, when you're trying to
get the power cable actually hooked up.
Is there a green light on the power on the power strip? Right. Is the circuit breaker actually working?
Is this actually a computer?
Oh, that's right. It could be a waffle iron.
Toaster.
Wait a minute. No wonder.
No wonder. The waffle iron is not computing.
Well, I don't know. There's some waffle irons now. They're pretty smart. So
I want to take a Mac Mini and put it into a waffle iron.
Oh, there you go.
So then people are like, what's that? I'm like, that's my new Mac. Dude, that's a waffle iron. It's not a Mac.
Yeah, but it gets hot enough that I can make waffles with it, too. But, you know, hardware I find can be in some ways, there are certain steps you can take, like you're saying, to break it down. Like, is the power hooked in? Is the keyboard hooked in? Is the monitor hooked to the computer? Versus software, sometimes you're like, okay, what are you trying to do with the software and what is it exhibiting? It's a different set of directions you take if it's software versus hardware, I think. So
definitely with software, a lot of times it goes back to, what did I do last? What did I add to this? You know, did I add a plugin? Did I add a font?
Did I update the OS?
Did I update the OS? What is it that I just did? That, or did I update QuickTime? That one has broken many things.
Oh yeah, and QuickTime is one of those classic. I download the latest version of QuickTime or iTunes, and suddenly things don't work the same.
So I always wait. You know, when these new updates get pushed out, I'm a fan of not clicking update.
I am the glutton for punishment. I'm the guy who, oh, it's new, it's out, hit update.
Well, I really wanted to run Numbers, the new iWork,
and it's very cool.
It's very cool, but I had to update my Mac in order to make it run. I'm like, well, okay, it's been a month and a half. I guess it's going to be
okay.
Now, because there's been two updates in the process that fixed another update.
Right.
So,
well, and see, the reason I'm one of the people that will hit the update button almost immediately, unless I'm literally in the midst of crunching on a project that I know has to get done, is because I know someone invariably within a week will call me and say, "Hey, Kenji, my computer's not working. Right. Why is this?" So I would rather hit the problem myself first, or try to kind of know about it before someone calls me.
I think if you're religious about your snapshotting of your system too, you know, I have clones up the wazoo of the machine all throughout the last week or whatever. So if I do an update that is going to host something, that's easy to get back.
You can always just boot off the other external drive and you're back to where you were.
Right.
Yeah.
But again, I think Kenji's is a good one. You'll always need to pause and say, am I in the middle of something critical? Yeah, nothing worse than just blindly hitting that update button and then, you know, that thing that you were supposed to have done 2 hours from now is not going
to
get done.
Well, and I think that's one of those things when, you know, trying to teach people to help themselves and get through their own tech support before they pick up the phone, call me frantically. It's like, okay, think about what you did. Did you just update your software? Right. Did you actually kick the power supply? Did you?
Or did you just turn on File Vault?
Exactly. No. File Vault's a totally different
beast. And so who knew that this was going to be a problem? So the guy turns on File Vault, and suddenly legacy Word documents won't open.
Right.
And it had this bizarro error. I searched the entire world for the answer for this problem, and I found it on some obscure site buried seven layers deep, and it was, you know, 2 years old, this problem. And I was like, oh, okay, I have to unfile vault this.
Right.
So basically, just nuke the machine for Morbid after backing everything up.
Just to be safe.
Just to be safe.
Yeah. And
you have to be sure.
Yeah.
And then adding everything back in. And then saying, don't use File Vault.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just going to say, I think, Kenji, you're right, and that a lot of the stuff is just experience. So on the one hand, there isn't some sort of magic that we have that other folks who might be looking to help themselves don't have. So half of it is just, you've run into this before. And the more tech work you do, the more wild and woolly cases like this File Vault one you will have encountered. But there are, I think, some sort of generic steps in these checklists that you're talking about, just heuristics for finding out what you're going to need to find that you don't know now.
Right. Yeah. Guy on the phone calls and, like, you know, there's like seven questions that you always ask, and it's invariably one of those seven.
Yeah.
I can't print is usually the printer's not turned on, there's no paper.
Yeah.
It's the cable came undone, or
the ink cartridge is not the, it's
right,
bad.
You know, something. You know, it's one of those.
It's a new printer and you haven't installed the driver for it.
Yeah.
It doesn't show up in the list. I can't print. I'm like, okay, that's what. Oh, you have a new computer?
You haven't bought the printer yet? Yeah. Okay. Step one. Yeah. You need to buy the printer.
Buy a printer.
Bring it home.
I will say that, you know, I think you can train people though to walk through this themselves. Definitely. Because, a good friend of mine, she was computer savvy, but she was always a little tech troubleshooting averse. And over the couple year time frame, I've got her to the point now where she only calls me when it's a really big issue. And I start walking her through, and she's, no, I already did all your other steps. Right. I've gone through and done that already. And she's invariably already done all the things that I would have done over the phone with her, which is great, because now it's like, okay, now I know you have a real problem.
It's liberating for them too, right? Nobody wants to be the person that runs into a problem with their computer, which are invariably becoming, you know, central, or not central necessarily, but important as a means of getting stuff done, even in the non-workplace.
Well, look at photography, right? Photography has gone away from the development pack of pictures
right.
that you put in the drawer to a critical problem, mm-hmm. right? My pictures are on my computer and I can't get to them.
Right.
Right now, it's not like, well, open up the drawer and look through the for the yellow packet. No, mm-hmm. it's like, it's but my it is vacation.
The similar, it is the online equivalent of that. And yeah. they just need to yeah. learn that process. And right. then they'll know how to sort through the drawers on their computer to find what they need. I think build
photodrawer.com.
File them by color.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned that. Just one quick segue. Yeah. In the last episode, we were talking about the Finder and all right. these different ways of dealing with the, even the default Finder and how to manage your work with that. And mm-hmm. we were talking about the text folks, the folks who are, love the quicksilvery text expander yeah. type things where you're
type it in,
what am I looking yeah. for as a word as opposed to where it is or what it looks like. And I was thinking it would be great for the visually oriented to have this sort of, it's almost like a fantasy Finder where you there's like a Forest Glen thing over here with all, and the, you know that you're heading towards, you always keep your banking records over in the Forest Glen, so when you see the doe come out of the woods, you know, look up at you, you know you're getting close to your bank records, and over here in the on the Lunarscape is where all your code stuff goes. These sort of like visual environments that would be the repositories for different types of phones.
So, that's anyway, very cool.
Little segue,
very funny.
When you're on the phone, John, you know, well, somebody calls you, where do you start?
So where do I start? First place I've studied a little bit. Mm-hmm. So like you, I'm generally ahead of the curve. I've installed right. some stuff. I've read some of the support boards. For example, Macintouch is a mm-hmm. great place to, you know, if you read it every day, you're going to see some different things that are mm-hmm. issues, problems coming up. And so those are on your radar right off.
Mac Fix It's another one. Accelerate Your Mac.
Mac OS Hints. Yeah. There's a bunch of different places that you will see in advance what potentially could be a problem.
Right.
The other thing that I do is around in the environment that I'm in, it's Photoshop, it's Office, it's Illustrator, it's, you know, it's a finite number of things because mm-hmm. there's things that everybody uses and these are critical to the production flow. And so because of that, I know that this stuff all works together.
Right.
And if there's an issue, you know, like for example, the machines are not allowed to automatically update themselves.
Mm-hmm. You turn that off.
Yeah. And that way you can control the process. Mm-hmm. So that you know in advance, okay, that version doesn't work with the scanner.
Right. Yeah.
There's something to be said for that, even if you're in a home environment, maybe one or two machines, sort of doing your updates in a batch like that, so that yeah. you know if you're going to run into a problem, you're going to run into it everywhere at once and solve
systems,
everywhere at once. Because nothing worse than installing the update on one machine, and then 6 months later, you get to updating somebody else's machine, and you forget about what it was that cropped up when you yep. did that last update.
So, for example, like where do I go? I'm on the phone, so the very first place is a search, mm-hmm. and that's probably going to be on Google. But I may look specifically on Apple.com mm-hmm. in the general support place for the top issues. So, for example, my AirPort doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Right, I'm going to go look and see is it updated.
Right.
The AirPort Extreme has been updated a few times since it's come out, and the 1.0 was very problematic. Mm-hmm. And so with the two updates, it fixed the two problems that had come up.
Right. So the first thing you recommend to people is really just go out and do a search. Go to a simple Google search or a pre-known location right. like Apple or Mac Fix It or any of these right. sites and do a search on your problems.
So if it's giving you an error, even without the name of the thing that you're working on, usually putting in quotes the full text of that error mm-hmm. yep. or a sentence from that error.
Or part of it, like right. the first five words.
Whatever's going to be sort of unique-ish right. about
the descriptive
it.
Piece yeah. of it.
And that tends to work even you know, despite mm-hmm. not having other helper words like what the hardware software right. item mm-hmm. can be.
Well, and then don't forget spaz words. So you put in a word that it's just a random word that might help because what happens is the search engines tend to keep things together, and so if you mm-hmm. add another word like fax or another word like
broken
or borked yeah. or something like that, so that it basically it's going to give you a different search,
right.
You know, return something that's slightly different. So you know, throwing aardvark in there isn't going to help, right. of course, but the idea of you know like purple or mm-hmm. flashing,
right. it's well, like a, or, and I think that actually brings up an interesting thing is that in general, even for doing tech support or helping yourself, people don't even always know how to do search properly.
Right. Well, you know, so if you're searching for AirPort Extreme, mm-hmm. start with the words AirPort and Extreme.
Yeah.
and then put the next thing, right, like error 51 or mm-hmm. whatever it is that the issue is.
Right.
I think Google helps, but Google doesn't always track all the sites that right. may help you. For example, Macintouch doesn't often show up at all in exactly. the search because yeah. the robots are set to no follow, no archive.
Right.
I don't think they get into the Apple support forums. I don't think those show up in Google. They don't show up at all.
There's a lot of Apple support stuff that doesn't show up in Google searches at all. That's mm-hmm. why I go directly to a lot right. of the mm-hmm. sites.
So you got to go to apple.com or actually discussions.apple.com mm-hmm. to get to those. And you know, everything is there. You'll right. find absolutely every problem that you might ever need to know about or need to fix.
Could take some time, though. I think that's one of the things that does frustrate folks, is that it's not just half the time someone will have had a very similar error, but you're sort of piecing together what might be your problem yeah. by looking at three or four things that are almost like it. Right. And then the solution is somewhere in there, but I think that people get frustrated on the amount of time that they have to spend. And
yeah.
I don't know if there are any shortcuts there other than trying to call the vendor that you're right. looking at. Well, it's always that trade-off between the time you're going to spend looking yourself versus yeah, sure. hold time or whatever, depending on
well,
the product.
Well, and maybe the strategy from here on is to not even bother to call. Use the support forum that's on the vendor site,
mm-hmm.
Or use the email system that's already there, because
mm-hmm.
Right. they've got way easier for a company to deal with 35 emails in an hour versus 35 phone calls in an hour.
And that's one thing, if you're going to use email support, that I highly recommend, that if you've already gone through and looked at their forums and or looked at their, here's our FAQ on helping you, and it's too generic, you put in your email when you send it to them, I've already looked here on this page, I looked at this, especially if they have a number for the support piece saying, here's what the FAQ,
mm-hmm.
put that in your email, because that tells them, hopefully, as long as it's not a bot responding,
yeah.
that you've already looked in their forums and that your problem is a deeper problem
or beyond that. And list the things
that
you've tried, too,
exactly.
right? Because the first thing they're going to do is just go to the support database, and it's gonna ask all the easy things.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you don't say that you've tried those things, chances are you're going to get back a response that says, have you tried? And it's the first thing you tried.
Exactly.
So definitely,
yeah.
it's a way to shortcut
the
process.
Did you zap the param? Did you rebuild the desktop? Did you,
yeah.
you know, all those.
Have you purchased the printer?
Have you purchased the printer? Did you get the cable with the printer? Oh, it didn't come with the cable?
Did you get the clear code?
Right. You need the unidirectional gold-plated cable.
Yes, the monster got, one?
Yeah, the yeah. The instead of the bi-directional $6 cable.
Right, okay.
So what about what should people expect based on the type of product that they're purchasing and the purchase price of that thing, as far as the support and what to expect from it, and ways around getting frustrated with, I spent $30 on my router and they're going to charge me $2 a minute to call them, sort of stuff.
Oh, well, maybe you should get a different router.
Yeah.
Or just manage your expectations properly. I think a yeah. lot of folks get cheap devices, which
right.
is fine. There's nothing, if don't buy a $3,000 router if you need a $30
yeah.
router. But I think that people need to manage their expectations of what they should expect, at least the timeliness of the
right.
support for stuff in that price category,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Although some of the good $30 products, like D-Link, for example, has got a great support line.
Do they?
For
their phone
buying,
support?
Yeah. I've actually called it once when I was trying to track down a bug that actually turned out to be a firmware bug in
mm-hmm.
one of their routers, that they said, oh, yeah, you found that bug.
Interesting.
So, but I think that's the other thing, is some of the cheap products, in general, I would agree, is that if it's a cheap product, don't expect you're going to get, you know, Microsoft or, well, Apple or whoever level support, you know, big corporation support, because they're not making enough money to do that necessarily.
Right. It's not that they're trying to gouge you by charging you
yeah.
to call them. It's that
they've
for
got
the
one
price
support
of what
guy instead
yeah.
of 100 support guys.
Or in the case of some of the shareware software, it's not even a support guy. It's
yeah.
the author.
Exactly.
And he's like, oh, I didn't know that bug existed.
But you know what I found? That sometimes those are the guys that respond the fastest
yeah.
to you, because they have the passion about their software and they're trying to evangelize it sometimes. So.
Yeah, it's some guy who's actually in QA for the company, as opposed to somebody sitting in a call center that's just reading out of the database.
Yeah, going playing, through a script. Basically.
No offense, you guys, you people are doing God's work, but I understand if you're not as enthused about it as,
yeah.
as someone who's in a senior
you're
QA position.
The bills with
yeah.
your job.
So the support sites, Mac OS X Hints,
mm-hmm.
OS X FAQ, Macintouch, Mac Fix It. Mac Fix It is two different sites. There's a pay for site, and then there's a sort of general open site.
Well, and it's hooked in with versiontracker.com, right?
Yeah.
So if you pay for, and I will say I actually do pay for version tracker, because if you pay for the high-end version, it gives you the Mac Fix It also subscription, so you get access to all the extra little goodies. You know, for troubleshooting, it's nice. For most people, they probably don't need it.
So I would say, and I have a subscription to Mac Fix It because it's one more resource to, to use.
It's a good
resource. It's actually very good. I mean, only thing I have to say is, if you're on a forum and if you ask for help, it doesn't do this, write the solution down at the end.
Yeah.
Put, you know, post your aha back.
Right.
Because like 99% of the time it's like, help, I can't get the birdies out of the tree. And it's like, okay. So then finally it's like, thanks for all your help. And like,
and how'd you do it?
What were the steps?
You're seeding someone else's search down the road. If you were frustrated that you couldn't find it in your search, chances are it's because someone else hasn't done exactly that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Even the rumors site, so macOS Rumors, Apple Insider, what's the other couple of them? They all seem to have a forum,
right?
And they all have a help section.
Right. People ask questions on those quite often, especially like Apple Insider. Yeah. And those forums are always active.
So even if you don't want to, and the idea of using those rather than using discussion.apple.com is that it's not censored or stuff isn't taken out or whatever. And that seems to be a problem on any of the corporate style forums.
Right. Well, they're trying to do, you know, they're trying to control their image a little bit. So
actually, a support site that I have had great luck in using in supporting people is microsoft.com/mac/support.
Yeah. Actually, the Microsoft support site for Mac stuff is actually pretty
good. It's really good. They have no choice. They have a lot of corporate customers. They have a lot of people that are using the product. And so, of course, the support's going
to
be good.
Well, they've got the employees to do it. I mean,
right. And Microsoft is a support company. So what works for other products that they make also works great for disseminating that information out to other places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other one that I've actually found recently, a lot of them do start having additional support areas, are companies that do hardware upgrades, third-party upgrades for Mac.
Oh, good.
So they basically, you know, sometimes if I'm looking at like, well, how do I replace the battery in there? You know, it should be simple. Mm-hmm. I can see it, but I don't know if I'm doing the right steps. Some of the upgrade sites, even though you might not have bought it from them, will put up all their upgrade steps right on their site.
Well, like the pull aparts for replacing a hard drive in an iMac.
Yeah, or even, you know, disassembling a laptop. You know, there's some great guides out there. One of the sites, I don't remember which one it is, has this entire like PDFs you can download for disassembling your computer if you are so inclined.
Yeah, especially with a laptop, I'd say don't do it unless you really want to get into it. Those things are so tightly packed. It's one thing to swap a hard drive out of a desktop system, and especially the newer ones are so, they make it so easy, but getting into a laptop is still, I mean, lots of pitfalls, I guess. I mean,
they're grown. They're not manufactured.
and I remember actually helping my friend, I think you talked before, when we've met before, is that, you know, I disassembled my friend's laptop, and she was just looking at like, what have you done?
Looking at it, how it flexes like this. And like, there's no way that these parts, as flexible as they are, made something that solid.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's one of the things that I like to tell people too when they're doing their own troubleshooting. You know, don't worry. As long as it's not critical data that you are really scared of on the software side, but more on the hardware side, you know, unless you're forcing it and you think you're going to break it, you try things. You know, you don't always try to make the problem worse, I guess is what I'm saying. But at the same time, don't be afraid to try different things. Make sure you plug that cable in. Make sure you unplug it and try those
backup,
things.
Then start trying
things. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, and that's always a good
thing. Then there's like, in the very first thing on my checklist, and I'll make sure that this checklist is available for the world, is stop. Don't do anything. Don't touch it.
Right.
Because if you keep poking it, it's going to... Then you're not going to be able to recover anything.
I do agree, and especially on the software side, on data side, I definitely agree with that. You know, if you get to a point where it's something's going wrong, you don't know what's happening, step back,
find another machine, find another machine to do your troubleshooting or whatever. Yeah. Just like don't even look at that one.
But at the same time, don't be afraid of necessarily thinking that you're inept enough that I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know if I should try anything.
Yeah, so, on the one hand, there's lots you can do to break stuff. And on the other hand, you'd be surprised how much you can do and you're not going to hurt anything.
Exactly.
A sort of corollary to that would be to just make your changes. And when you're troubleshooting something, you want to make measured steps.
Yeah.
What the pokety pokety poke sometimes leads to a solution, and then you have no idea what actually fixed it. So if it ever, and hopefully it never comes back for you, but the sort of, it is hard to be that patient, but especially when you're having a trouble, but one thing at a time, update a driver, whatever, reboot,
write it down.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I did this. And then I did this, and then I did this.
At the very least, if you need to go to some third party or the manufacturer for tech support, you've already assembled your list of what you've tried,
right,
and hopefully you're shortcutting the process with them.
Other resources. You know, the invisible ones, the old ones.
The invisible resources.
Yeah, the Usenet, a.k.a. NetNews.
the hidden thing that most people don't know about anymore.
Right. It's still active, and it's still a valuable resource for getting information, especially past information. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going through an archive of, because it's automatically archived,
right,
and it's automatically archived all the way back to the beginning of it.
Yeah, it's, depending on who's tracking it. So.
Well, if you're using Google News, it's news.google.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, Yahoo does the same pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Too, so. Those thankfully do show up quite often in the Google results,
yep,
half the
exactly
time, especially when I'm looking for tech stuff, like there's a bug in something that's sort of Unix-y software stuff. Invariably, I'm finding my answer through some Google searched post to an archive of some sort. And you can tell that you're on these because the navigation of the threads is always not as elegant as you want it to be. You know, it's like they're always missing the show next in thread. It's like, just add that, please. Thank you.
It's not lists. I mean, it's not news. It's groups.google.com.
I was going to say,
That's it.
Your ISP usually has a feed to the...
if you're trying to troubleshoot, like...
Well, if you want to subscribe to a feed.
Oh, right. Oh, if you want to subscribe to a feed, yes.
Right. You don't have to use... You don't have to pay for a service. It's probably part of your ISP. Although, depending on which list you're trying to use, you may find them truncated or not. The archive doesn't go back that far.
Right. Yeah, a lot of them only keep an archive so far back.
Like,
so,
you know, like some 7 days, a week,
most.
3 days, depending on the list that you're subscribing to,
right,
or wanting to watch. Panic has a really great news reader called Unison.
Yeah.
And start with there. You can use it for a number of days for free. And then if you decide that it's not for you, you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. You know, another great resource besides just the manual or things like that, or hidden resources, and I consider it a hidden resource, is most Macs now come with a repair disc.
Get it?
And it's like Tech Tools Pro usually, and you just pop that in run it and see what happens.
Especially for hardware diagnostics, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's a good little app, you know. It comes with all Macintoshes pretty much. It's a gray disk in most cases. At least I think it's still a gray disk. and it's in that little software pack you usually get that people sometimes don't think they need, so they get rid of it or they misplace it. And it's like, don't misplace that disk set when you get your computer.
Or if you get AppleCare.
Yeah. Comes in the AppleCare box.
Right, it comes in the AppleCare box. So if you buy a computer, if you buy a Mac or any Apple product, you have up to a year to add AppleCare to that machine. And what that gets you is 2 more years of support and hardware support.
Right. And in most cases anymore, I recommend people get that.
Especially if you have a PowerBook.
Oh, yeah. Definitely if you have a PowerBook. And, you know,
MacBook.
In the old days, you tried being upsell on the maintenance and all that. It wasn't worth it. But now, for a lot of things, they realize that, well, we really need to give them a value for the price that they're paying and the maintenance. Mm-hmm. And AppleCare is one of those things I definitely recommend people get. So,
otherwise, you'd get scared with a $700 bill.
Did one time.
How about list.apple.com? Are you using any of the resources on there?
I don't.
I do. Yeah.
There is 2 pages of things. Everything from developing to
software support.
I guess I'm on the development lists.
Yeah, well, no, there's
it's
all
it's there's all same, part of that.
It's all part of that, right?
But, for example,
I'm not on any of the support
server
lists,
the server stuff is all there. So there's both user and developer lists for this. And if you go to this, you can see all the stuff that's there. A lot of it's just going to be noise, and you're not going to really benefit from it. Some of it, for example, automator dash users. You know, here's a great example. Mm-hmm. You're going to see tips. You're going to see how to's. You're going to see all that. And plus, you can ask a question like, if I do this, it crashes.
Right. And if you let that stuff pile up in whatever reader you're using, like I've used even in Thunderbird, just using the built-in reader there to let these things sort of, if you filter them correctly when they're coming in, and you just let them pile up, it's a nice local search. So even if you're not reading the stuff, or you even have your list automatically set to mark as read and dump in this folder, it can become one of the first places, especially if it's for a product that's critical to your workflow, like you were talking about, then it can be your first place to look.
You maintain your own archive of the list information.
Right, and it doesn't it's all text, so it doesn't, as long as they're not a bunch of attachments on the thing, which they usually aren't, it's not taking up any space.
One of the most convenient places to get tech support is magazines.
Yeah. Magazines are still a very good resource a lot of times.
It comes in a nice package once a month. You can take it with you wherever. It doesn't need power to use. Mm-hmm. And often you can find things that will solve a problem. And you can always write into the magazine and say, hey, how do I get this solved?
And I think that's actually an interesting thing in having people do their own support, basically. Is the problem you're trying to solve time critical?
Right.
Most of the time when people are calling me, it is time critical because I got to have it done now. Right. But if it's a tech support thing that, you know, oh, this is weird, I don't know what it is. Is it time critical? If it's not, make sure you write it down. You know, again, post-it notes, whatever. Make sure you write down and check on it, because it could be something that will escalate in something that turns into, I have to fix it now instead of a, I could have fixed it earlier when I had the time.
That's good advice. I think people try to punt dealing with those things sometimes too long in a project. It always makes sense, and it's amazing how often I catch myself doing this every now and again. If you've got something that's going to need to be delivered, and there are tools or software that is critical to getting it done, the first thing you do when you're starting the thing is, are all of those components there so that when it comes time to delivery, I'm not going to have, you know, an oh crap moment at at the very
end. Well, and
end
if
there.
You know that your word processor is crashing every single time that you get to page four, maybe you should fix that before
you should have the term paper shorter that has 20 projects. Pages.
Yeah. So in the magazines, Macworld, Mac User UK, Mac Addict, I don't think it's called Mac Addict anymore, but they have all of them have support articles, how to fix stuff or how to do stuff.
And that's probably a good thing if you're sort of trying to implicitly absorb techniques for fixing things. That's probably what you get most out of those articles, right? Because it's unless you have a problem and they happen to be writing about it that month, you may not be reading about it right then. But you're seeing a process that the author is taking them through, which is going to be similar to these heuristics we're talking about.
Don't forget the Photoshop and Illustrator and the other books that are around that. Those don't often have a tech support, but they do have the how-to stuff.
Although Adobe has a great tech support section, the thing that is interesting about it is that a lot of it's paid. So you can ask questions, and people will say, I will charge you $3 to answer your questions. Kind of an interesting system a little bit. I've used it once and found it to be okay, but I think it's the biggest problem with it is you don't know the quality of the answer you're going to get back from.
I like that model. I don't know about Adobe specifically, and I don't have any names off the top of my head, but I've read, and I haven't used these yet, I'm going to try a couple of them. These, in a variety of industries, they're doing this sort of people who work in the industry, whether it be auto repair or tech stuff or whatever, it's they just sign up to be to get lists of these questions, and that can be this sort of interesting third way where if you can't figure out yourself or you know that the support with the vendor is going to be a nightmare. One of these sort of pay per incident, they're usually not so expensive that you're going to get burned if they don't find your answer.
$3, $5.
Right. I mean, who cares if they don't, as long as it's not a time critical thing.
Answers.google.com.
Right.
And I think Yahoo has one. And then there's another one that Amazon did called Mechanical Turk.
Well, Mechanical Turk is a great system for doing all kinds of things.
And those are the generic ones, of course, but I'm talking about ones where it's specifically experts within the field.
Yeah. Adobe's is a great example. They're literally supposed to be, I think there's somewhat of a vetting process, if I'm not mistaken, with the Adobe ones. And some of the other companies have companies have these support forums where they have vetted people that are supposedly experts.
Not to knock the generic ones, too. You can get great answers on Google Answers and Yahoo Answers.
Or just search for Google Answers that somebody might have already asked that question.
Yep.
And that's the thing. you know, you're not in this by yourself. We're all in the collective. We've all asked these questions.
That'd be a great question to ask. Has this question already been asked on yes, Google Answers?
Yes. And the answer is yes. This question is our, your question of your, of the question has already been asked.
Well, and again, that's another big support thing, I think, is if you're going to go ask on a forum, make sure you look first in the forum if it's been asked.
Do a quickie search. Yeah. Like on list.apple.com, mm-hmm. that goes back forever,
yeah.
right? And so your answer is probably already there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of times where I'll spend, you know, an extra 10, 15 minutes literally going through the forum, trying mm-hmm. to see if my question's been asked and if it's been answered. And the thing you have to know is sometimes the question is not necessarily in the heading of the forum post. It's actually in the body of the post. Right. So you have to sometimes, well, that might have something to do with what I'm looking at. So I'll read that post grouping and see if there's anything funny, in it.
The way that I read those lists mm-hmm. is I always read the second question.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
it's like, here's the question, right? Okay, I'm not bothering with that because the title's right. I'll read the second post.
Yeah. mm-hmm.
And then you can see, because the author's name will be there, and then here's that, and go, oh, that guy answers questions all the time, so mm-hmm. that's going to be useful. And then sometimes there's a follow-up question, so then you can skip that, and then go, okay, there's the third one.
Yep.
And so when you see the hierarchy of this, you go, okay, well, it's probably really interesting, these top ones, and then it degrades into, my car is red.
Right.
Don't you? I'm all for reinforcing the good etiquette of look first to then ask. Mm-hmm. But don't. It strikes me that it might be a bit of a losing battle in that the person who has a problem who wants to just drop in and get it answered is always has the incentive to externalize the cost to them yeah. in terms of time by just asking. I mean, I don't know of a good solution to it, but I have the sinking feeling that over time it's a losing battle. Because the people who are in the community there that might hang out on the list, right. they have an incentive in people looking elsewhere if something right. gets asked 20 times a day or whatever.
Right.
But it's this weird sort of conflicting incentives for yeah. the person who's dropping in that needs an answer versus the folks who kind of live in that little sphere. It's one of their communities yeah. on the net.
What's funny, though, is my friends who have become more troubleshooters mm-hmm. based off me, like, you know, kind of showing them where to search and a process to go through, they actually, in most of the cases now, in their offices, are they become kind of like the secondary troubleshooter, mm-hmm. tech support mm-hmm. guy. Like, well, he didn't know. Can you help me with this? Or like in an office where, you know, IT is this big corporate monolith, and mm-hmm. I just need this answer.
There's always that guy, that secondary person who yep. knows how to do stuff.
Yeah.
That's why I usually tell people I'm a writer.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you got to watch out for that. The curse of competence.
Yeah, right. Exactly. The curse of competence.
You suddenly become the tech support person, even if you don't know all the tech support answers. So. Yeah.
And next thing you know, you're forming SQL queries.
You're fixing bad PowerPoint presentations that have crashed somehow.
All right. Well, a couple of last things. Do not forget about Sherlock.
Hmm.
Sherlock is this guy. That guy, Sherlock Button, and I think it is the little tiny red plus, and that gets you into Apple Tech Notes. And Apple Tech Notes have everything from how to reset a battery to how to zap the parameter RAM mm-hmm. to how to troubleshoot a hard drive, how to get a kernel panic, you know, whatever you're looking for. Mm-hmm. It's like it'll be there. It's a good resource to have.
It's one of those things that people forget is still part of the Mac OS. It was a big thing, you know.
Yeah, it was a huge thing. I'm sad that it's potentially going away. Next.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I only have a couple last things, and one of them is that if you are looking for or if you have a patch that are supposedly going to fix all your problems, test that patch on something that you don't care about first.
Well, the thing is, though, a lot of times people don't have the luxury of doing
sure.
that.
If you have extra hardware, definitely
yeah,
do
if
it.
If you have extra hardware, definitely try it first, because sometimes, you know, you'll try it and it won't actually do anything and it might actually cause
Make
more
it
harm.
Worse. Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing is keep your old stuff around. Keep old disks around. Keep old versions around.
Yes.
You know, if you haven't already made a little server mm-hmm. and thrown it in the corner,
yep.
you probably might want to think about doing that. And then that way you can keep, you know, revisions of shareware programs yep. that come out or different revisions of whatever commercial software you're using.
Well, and you know, we're mainly talking about Mac stuff here, but that's most definitely true on the Windows side. You know,
yeah.
I don't know how many times people say, well, it's not working. I said, well, where's your driver disk? On the Mac, I usually don't worry about that. But on the Windows side, without that driver disk, sometimes you can't even get the computer to boot up without having the driver to reinstall the PC you need sometimes. So
well, right. Oh. And then that's the whole drill down issue, right? Just try to find the drivers for a specific model.
Oh, I hate
and
that.
Sometimes you can find them, and sometimes you can't.
The company went out of business. They pulled that software archive offline, whatever.
Yeah, it's always something with those things. Yeah. But and we don't really have to worry about it, but sometimes if we're running parallels and you have that old piece of joystick
yeah you want to hook it in through parallels oh man,
you might need, I don't know why you'd need a driver for a joystick, but the idea is you keep your drivers around, keep old versions of drivers around. Any last things, Ben?
That's it.
You know, one thing I would like to say too, for people that do, you know, I've got a tech support problem, help me, you know, thank the person you called that they actually answered your problem. I don't know how many times people call me up, I'll answer their problem, and I don't hear back from them until the next time they have a major problem.
I'd stop answering those calls.
Why I don't carry a phone around, because there was never a happy call.
Yeah.
It was always like, help me.
Yeah. Tell a person thank you every so often if they helped you out.
For the karma, if nothing else.
Yes, for the karma of it. Most definitely.
Ben Durbin.
Hi.
Thanks for showing up.
My pleasure. Always happy to be
Kenji here. Kenji
Kato. Hey, thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks for being late.
Yeah. Wait, is that pounding in my head?
Yeah, that like pounding that? Is in my head, too.
Okay. Hopefully it's not in their head, though.
Hopefully it's close to mic'd and we don't have to worry about it so much.
Get...
We can't fix that, though. That's not fixable in post.
That's a tech support issue we're not going
to
deal
exactly.
with right now.
Exactly. That means we have to stop the building process across the street. I'm John Foster, and this thing is called Mac Break Tech. And we'll see you on the other side.